The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Reoccurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you feel atheists make better cases for their disbelief in God than Christians make for faith. Well, if that is how you feel, then welcome. I am a Christian. I debate atheists all the time, but still, welcome to our sanctuary, a sanctuary for skeptics and doubters where you can ask questions without getting your head chewed off. We will get to the atheist subject, but first, much has been happening in the news as we fast approach Christmas and the end of the year. For instance, Obama and the Republicans did finally make a deal. At a recent press conference before the deal, President Obama described the compromise he struck up with the Republican leaders, grudgingly admitting that an extension of the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy will live another 2 years. That's what he had to concede. He then proceeded to explain how protecting that smaller percentage of rich folk is, quote unquote, the Republican holy grail. Don't you just love that? That's the holy grail of the Republicans, protecting the rich. They're not interested in protecting anybody else. I guess it takes a would-be messiah to display an ignorance about anything holy, grail or otherwise. But make no mistake, when it comes to money matters, Obama realizes just exactly what he is doing. And what he is doing is this: raising the flag of class warfare to exploit our precarious economic times and rebuild the ashes of a once great country into a socialist redistribution of wealth machine by religiously, obediently following Saul Alinsky's playbook, as if that was the Holy Grail. Naturally, our president understands all too well how those who make more than $250,000 a year include not only rich people, but also owners of small mom-and-pop businesses. He also comprehends a very easy-to-grasp reality. Taxing the brains out of small businesses cripples their ability to hire people. Am I crazy, or do we need more jobs right now rather than less jobs? Finally, he knows that as business grows, revenue for the government also grows without needing to raise taxes any further. Even non-economists understand such simple math, along with kids, fat kids, skinny kids, kids who climb on rocks. So I am quite certain a Harvard graduate has also figured it out, yet all of this is completely irrelevant. You see, the trick here is having a president who actually wants to fix our economy. But United States capitalism isn't the only subject people lie about. Few conflicts in world news have experienced as much historical revision as the tension between Israel and the Palestinians. Because this saga is falsely, and I do mean falsely, associated with the real reason Muslim terrorists attack Americans, and because few people take the time to crack open books that could shed some much-needed light, a crash course may be in order. If the listener will indulge me, I'd like to begin with a well-known illustration. Do you remember the recurring Peanuts comic strip storyline where Lucy used to set up the football for Charlie Brown, inviting him to some friendly, sporting good fun? Here, Charlie Brown, I'll hold the football for you. Run up and kick it. After Charlie Brown runs toward the ball and lifts his foot in the air, Lucy quickly yanks the football out of the way. Charlie Brown lands flat on his back. Now, this was not a one-time piece from Charles Schulz. It was as repetitious as Linus's blanket and Schroeder's piano. Again and again, sometimes once or twice a year, sometimes more frequently, Lucy offers to secure the football for good old Charlie Brown. And Charlie Brown shouts, "You must think I'm pretty stupid if you're planning that old trick again." And then Lucy looks very sincere as she answers, "But I've changed, Charlie Brown. Don't you have any faith in the betterment of human nature?" So Charlie Brown tries again. As always, Lucy swipes the football out of the way, and Charlie Brown lands on his back for the 500th time. Who could have imagined that a cartoon might serve as an analogy for important world affairs? Maybe this was the farthest thing from Charles Schulz's mind, but his football scenario does remind me of Israel's dealings with the Arab world and the Western world. When we think about it, voices similar to Lucy's have been bargaining with Israel for many years. Instead of saying, "Here, Charlie Brown," they say, "Here, Jew." "Here, Jews. Some wealthy Arab landlords have land for you to purchase. Of course, after you buy it, the land will be in dispute. But go ahead, take the land. Here, Jews. We, the British Empire, run the entire Middle East, and we have worked out, in accordance with the League of Nations, the Balfour Declaration. This means we are inviting Jews from all over the world to return to their native homeland, joining the Jews who were already living in that region of the Middle East for several thousands of years. Here, Jews, it looks like we had to make a deal with the Arabs too. So 75% of what we offered you has been given away and made into a new country called Jordan. But the remaining 25% is all yours. Knock yourselves out, kids. Here, Jews, boy, have we got a surprise for you. This is going to be one of those good news, bad news things. First, the bad news. The Arabs don't want you to have anything, not even the remaining 25%. They claim they should own all of it. And now, the good news. We're not going to give them all of it. We're only going to give them half of it. So half of the remaining 25% is all yours. Oh, I guess we should tell you, it's a checkered map with indefensible borders. But it's all yours. Here, Jews, the Arabs rejected their half of Palestine. Instead, they're going to join their neighbors, Egypt, Jordan, Syria, and others, to snuff the life out of you. However, the United Nations did just vote to partition the land, so it's all yours if you can defend it. Here, Jews, you won your war of independence, but now there are displaced Arabs from Palestine, and most of the Arab countries will not take them in. Since you took in every single Jew displaced from Arab countries, you should consider taking in Arab refugees, too. Here, Jews, what a year for you, 1967. You have the admiration of the entire world, for in just 6 days you defeated those neighbor countries who said once again that they wanted to wipe you out. But now the Palestinian refugees who were part of Jordan are your responsibility. We hope you treat them well. Here, Jews, good job giving back the Sinai to Egypt, even though you had to take it from her when she threatened to annihilate you in 1967. Now you and Egypt are at peace. Never mind that she will sponsor terrorists who want to destroy you and say vile things about you in her newspapers. Congratulations for giving peace a chance and returning the Sinai. Here, Jews, now that you agreed to give Yasser Arafat 90% of what he wanted in the Oslo Accords, please realize that was not enough. He wants more. Here, Jews, we know the Intifada is bad, with Jewish children getting blown up on buses and all. If you make a deal with the Palestinians to turn over occupied territory, one city at a time, peace can come to the Middle East. Here's the deal. You return land, they will promise to stop killing you. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to our program. I was comparing the many deals that the United Nations and the British and Palestinians and Arabs have made with Israel over the years to the deal that Lucy always made with Charlie Brown when she promised to hold the football for him. And we left off on this one. Here, Jews, we know the Intifada is bad, with Jewish children getting blown up on buses and all. If you make a deal with the Palestinians to turn over occupied territory, one city at a time, peace can come to the Middle East at last. Here's the deal. You return land, they will promise to stop killing you. Sound fair? Here, Jews, the day after you made that peace deal, more suicide bombers attacked. That means your deal was not enough. You need to offer more. Oh, and make very sure you do not send soldiers after the terrorists. That will make them especially mad, and they'll have to stop with the Mr. Nice Guy stuff. Here, Jews, thanks for giving the Gaza Strip back to the Palestinians. In return, they are burning down all the synagogues in Gaza and will fire missiles into Israel day after day after day after day. Here, Jews, thanks for agreeing to turn over more towns to the Palestinians. Just one thing. We know you built that wall to keep out the suicide bombers, but such a wall really obstructs the peace process. Those walls should be coming down. Are you catching on? Nothing. And I mean absolutely nothing Israel does will ever please the Palestinians. No deal, no treaty will make a difference. Neither will money nor concessions of further land. When Palestinians mention occupied territory, they do not mean the West Bank. They do not mean the Golan Heights. They include that, but they mean all of Israel. But then people shouldn't be surprised. The complete dismantling of Israel has been in the Palestinian charter from the beginning. Palestine does not include on its maps any pictures of Israel. Palestinian children are taught the Jews are devils. I've even seen those broadcasts. Meanwhile, there are atheists in the United States, and they feel that they are just as persecuted in America as the poor Palestinians are persecuted in Israel. And the facts supporting that persecution are about as accurate as the facts supporting the persecution of the Palestinians. As a matter of fact, politicians seem to be bending over backwards these days for the atheists, not the Christians. In an attempt to duck the controversy of recent Christmas season displays at Washington State's Capitol building in Olympia, Governor Gregory decided to pass on a manger scene for 2010. Her new policy is the latest chapter of a year-to-year continuing saga, avoiding any legal action in response to First Amendment violation back in 2008, permission was granted for the Freedom From Religion Foundation to post a sign at the state capitol building. The message did not exactly wish tidings of good cheer, but it did act as a peculiar companion piece to the shepherds and wise men displayed around baby Jesus. The idea seemed to be that if atheists were allowed to attack Christians by ridiculing their holiday, then, and only then, could we agree that the replica of an infant in a stable does not violate fundamental civil liberties. The sign said, and I quote, "At this season of the winter solstice, may reason prevail. There are no gods, no devils, no angels, no heaven or hell. There is only our natural world. Religion is but myth and superstition that hardens hearts and enslaves minds." Now, an identical sign has appeared for several years in the Madison, Wisconsin Capitol building, 2010 being no exception. Many outspoken people, including Fox News' Bill O'Reilly, challenged Governor Gregory back in 2008 to remove the offensive in-your-face verbiage. Things got even goofier when a newer group insisted on a Festivus poll, made popular by the sitcom Seinfeld. Still others wanted to make statements at the Capitol building about Santa being a child molester. You couldn't really write this stuff. Is it any wonder that Gregory finally opted to get rid of all indoor displays? Last year, the atheists were asked to put their sign up outside the building. This year, Grigori declined the Catholic League's gift, offered to all 50 governors, a ready-for-display manger scene. Instead, Grigori promised to continue putting up a tree, so long as people understand that it's a holiday tree and not a Christmas tree. Well, actually, holiday means holy day, but keep it under your hat. Otherwise, we'll be asked what's holy about it, and additional decorations will become casualties of America's current insanity. At the expense of making an elephant-sized understatement, one can argue that freedom of expression need not translate into every conceivable opinion symbol erected side by side at all times. On the other hand, not every Christian insists that these atheist signs must be removed. After all, if we don't defend the rights of others to exercise free speech, we lose credibility to protect our own message. So how should we deal with this sign? I'll tell you how we should deal with it when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
How should Christians respond to these atheist signs that are put next to mangers at Capitol buildings? Well, I was saying before the break that we should defend their rights to do it, but then exercise our own freedom of speech. Now, ironically, many atheist organizations would censor me while I defend them, not only for their right to build public displays, but also to share opposing viewpoints in the classroom, on the radio, or in any public forum. Well, this radio talk show host offers a suggestion to fellow Christians, leave the atheist signs right where they are. Instead, let us build signs of our own, or perhaps circulate general letters to the public. And the following is a sample letter that I have written. To whom it may concern. Having once been an atheist myself, Christmas time did not threaten me. Never did I feel that my rights to disbelieve were in jeopardy, merely because I heard some music or saw some decorations. It simply did not matter. Nobody was forcing me to become a Christian, and that alone was the only valid constitutional consideration. Returning to the academic front, I, as a former atheist, dialogue with many current runs, challenging them point by point in public debates or informal discussions. Some atheists are sincere, open-minded, loving, and honest in assessing the limitations of human knowledge, including their own. Others, while smugly lecturing the religious, display an arrogance matched only by their incredible ignorance, unaware of the historical, archaeological, philosophical, and scientific arguments for God in general, or Christianity more specifically. They speak as if they know for a fact that the supernatural is impossible. When asked to prove their position, they smile and explain how one cannot prove a negative and is not required to do so. They insist that the burden of proof is on the theist since he or she is the one making an affirmative assertion, but their own sign is itself an affirmative assertion. They say religion is but a myth. Notice they do not say religion might be a myth. I do respect most of the atheists I have met, but the specific individuals who created this sign are only revealing their own dogma and blind faith, the very qualities they so often accuse Christians of. As for enslaving minds, even Albert Einstein, although certainly not a Christian, did believe in some kind of God. This is a quote from Albert Einstein. "Everyone who is seriously involved in the pursuit of science becomes convinced that a spirit is manifest in the laws of the universe, a spirit vastly superior to that of man, and one in the face of which we, with our modest powers, must feel humble." Gee, I must wonder how poor Albert got by in life with such an enslaved mind. As for those who today suppress discussion of intelligent design in school, we could gently ask about their soft hearts and free minds. Let me close by speaking out for atheists in general. Please do not blame all of them for the hypocrisy and intellectual bankruptcy displayed in this sign at the Capitol building. Sincerely, Bob Siegel, the former atheist who changed his position based upon facts, not faith. Now, I wrote that letter and I put it up on the Washington Times last week. Ooh, did I get responses? And I will read some of them to you. Now, regarding our next 2 weeks, I don't usually take much vacation. That's why these many years of the Bob Siegel Show, you have experienced very few repeats or guest hosts. You've experienced some. Christmas time is different for me. I do enjoy taking time off at Christmas, my absolute favorite time of the year. These next 2 weekends, the weekends corresponding with Christmas and New Year's, we will be airing some best of broadcasts, beginning with our annual Christmas celebration. And now you'll actually hear it on December 26th, the day after Christmas. But you aren't one of those Scrooges who turns off the lights and music one day after Christmas, are you? Next week, December the 26th, listen in as co-hosts Lori Lewis and myself interview singer Sylvia Lang. This has been a favorite of our shows, niece of composer Hugh Martin, who wrote one of the most popular Christmas songs of all time, "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas." Meanwhile, as I continue today's live broadcast, let's go to our mail, some from Facebook, some from questions at bobsiegel.net, some in response to my articles. This is from Nathan. Nathan says, "Bob, folks were debating this the other night, and someone argued that religion would have been a great tool for kings, Caesars, tyrants, etc., to rule their kingdoms and empires on the notion that it's easier to influence and control people if you promise a punishment that no one can disprove and you offer a reward for obedience that you will never have to pay. Then if you wanted to conquer the kingdom next door, you could easily assemble an army ready and willing to die for God and country. Most folks were illiterate in the Middle Ages anyway. They weren't likely to do any fact-checking at the library." Laughing out loud. "Then it got scary when someone pointed out that the Council of Nicaea, which assembled the Bible, was convened by Constantine, who had the final say on what was or wasn't included in the Bible. Didn't Constantine boil his pregnant wife alive? I was raised a Christian, but that conversation left me some doubts." Okay, let me respond to this. First of all, Christianity was not created in the Middle Ages. Christianity came on the scene in the first century. So let's look at what it was like in the first century. Even then, the conventional wisdom with some people would be that, oh yes, the kings offered this kind of religion to keep people in mind. Well, it never happened that way with Christianity. Let me say it again. Never happened. Nathan, you can remind your friends how the Roman emperors tortured Christians. It wasn't convenient to be a Christian under Rome. What history book are they reading? They tortured Christians because Christians worshipped Christ and refused to call the emperor himself God. As for Constantine, Council of Nicaea had nothing to do with the Bible. The Council of Carthage put the Bible together. Constantine had been dead many years, so somebody needs to read some actual history books instead of reading the Da Vinci Code. This next letter is from Tony. Tony is also a Christian who's had some dialogues with atheists. Tony writes, "I talk with a lot of atheists and debate with them regularly. We've had many discussions that have led in many different directions, as you can imagine, and have probably experienced yourself. The answer that I am seeking currently is trying to find any hard evidence of Jesus' existence. Here is the latest post by The Atheist. It's easy for me to believe that certain things happened millions and millions of years ago because we have hard physical evidence that points to those conclusions, Big Bang, dinosaurs, etc. It's not easy for me to believe a story from 1,000 years ago after the fact. Okay, the Bible was not written 1,000 years after the fact, people. It's just, I will say my response until I finished reading this. It's not easy for me to believe a story from 1,000 years ago after the fact, especially when none, maybe what the guy's trying to say is that we, today in the 21st century, are 1,000 years after the fact. In that case, he's still wrong because we're 2,000 years after the fact. The Bible was written a couple of decades after the fact if we're talking about the New Testament. So whatever he meant, he's wrong on either side. Anyway, he says, we've all been cautioned not to believe anything we read. Same applies here. Then he talks about the birth of Jesus. Do you believe he was born on December 25th? Did you know that Horus, Mithras, Dionysus, and Ra were also born on that day? And if that weren't enough, there's plenty of biblical evidence to support that he wasn't born on that day. As for early witnesses, and he talks about Flavius Josephus, because there is a passage from Josephus about Jesus. He says, it's widely believed that the account of Jesus, one paragraph, wasn't actually written by Josephus, but by the church during the 4th century, way after his death. Josephus adds nothing that is not in the gospel narratives, nothing that would have been unknown by Christians already. Outside of this one bogus paragraph, there isn't a single reference to Christianity by Josephus anywhere in his writings. Okay, the person couldn't possibly be more wrong. First of all, Josephus has two references to Jesus, not one. Only one of them are in dispute, not both of them. He also mentions Tacitus, the Roman historian who talked about Jesus. He says his account is also a fraud like Josephus's. Okay, so Tony says, if you can direct me to evidence or have an answer, please let me know. Thank you and Merry Christmas. Well, Merry Christmas to you, Tony. First of all, Tony, and to any others who get into these discussions, on my website, bobsiegel.net, there are many different articles, including some that talk about the existence of Jesus from historical testimonies outside of the New Testament. His alleged non-existence, even as an historical figure, is a very new idea, only within the last 15 years or so. The reason you hear about it so much from atheists is because these days, many of them get their talking points from the same anti-Christian websites. Neither Josephus' passages nor Tacitus' passage has ever been proven to be fraudulent. No serious scholar doubts the writings of Tacitus. As for Josephus, regarding this paragraph about Jesus, here's the breakdown. Most scholars accept most of it. Some accept all of it. I personally accept all of it. Let's look at it. Josephus was born about 37 AD and lived to about 100 AD. He talks briefly, but matter-of-factly, about Jesus. He did not live long after Jesus and could easily have encountered many eyewitnesses to the resurrection. He would also have had access to documentation unavoidable to subsequent generations. We know Josephus was not a Christian. For one thing, he believed that the Roman Emperor Vespasian was the Messiah. Also, a Christian would have spent much more time in detail documenting a movement which he felt was the most significant one in the world. Josephus's clear yet casual interest in Jesus indicates a desire to list comprehensively the influential men of his day, not a desire to spend a lot of time there as a biographer. In this manner, he mentions the resurrection almost off the cuff. That's not only is he verifying the existence of Jesus, but the resurrection. And he mentions it as if it's not even a matter of dispute. This is the quotation from Josephus. I'm reading it to you. Now there was about this time Jesus, a wise man, if it be lawful to call him a man. For he was a doer of wonderful works, a teacher of such men as received the truth with pleasure. He drew over to him both many of the Jews and many of the Gentiles. He was the Christ. And when Pilate, at the suggestion of the principal men amongst us, had condemned him to the cross, those that loved him at the first did not forsake him, for he appeared to them alive again at the third day, as the divine prophets had foretold these and 10,000 other wonderful things concerning him, and the tribe of Christians so named from him are not extinct to this day. Okay, now, our friend was mentioning that, well, he's not saying anything that the Gospels don't already say. That's not the point. Of course the Gospels already say it. The Gospels are history. People are claiming it's not corroborated by more history. If we want a corroboration, we'd want it to say a lot of the same things. Now, people claim Josephus didn't really write this. Why do they make that claim, and can they back up that claim? I'll give you a clue. They can't, and I'll show you why they can't when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's daily blog on townhall.com. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. BobSiegel.net.
We've been talking about the ancient Jewish historian Josephus, who was not a Christian. I just read a quotation from his, a paragraph, and it was one of two that he wrote about Jesus. And in this one, he actually claims that Jesus rose from the dead, or is at least reporting that people said that. And yes, it is a very contested and disputed passage. The argument goes like this. Josephus could not possibly have written this paragraph about Jesus because he wasn't a Christian. Only Christians would call him Christ, and only Christians believe he rose from the dead. Now, I hope you're paying careful attention, because ironically, these very same skeptics, are usually the ones who begin their dialogue by saying, show me just one ancient historian other than a Christian who claims Jesus rose from the dead. If it were really so historical, people other than Christians would have known about it. And I say, okay, Josephus, a credible ancient source whose writings are widely used by historians and archaeologists alike for their knowledge of the ancient era. Oh, yeah, wow, Josephus doesn't count. We know for a fact that the Jesus passage is corrupted, probably placed there by some Christian interpolator years after Josephus died. Oh, we know this for a fact, do we? Tell me, exactly how do we know it for a fact? Well, because Josephus wasn't a Christian. Only a Christian would have claimed Christ rose from the dead. But friend, you just asked me for a non-Christian historian. You catching on? This is called having your cake and eating it too. Sometimes there's simply no pleasing people. You give them just exactly what they ask for, and they dismiss it by engaging in circular reasoning. The bottom line, that passage exists. It's there. In every extant manuscript of Antiquities 18, the claim of Christian rewriting is an argument based upon silence, and those are the most fleeting arguments of all. If one wants to make such a claim, the burden of proof is on him. Now, this rebuttal is based upon three erroneous assumptions. First, that Josephus could not call Jesus the Christ if he thought Emperor Vespasian was the Messiah. Second, that Josephus would have to be a follower of Jesus to believe he rose from the dead. Third, that the phrase, if it be lawful to call him a man, could not be used by anyone who didn't accept the deity of Christ. Okay, I can understand these objections. I can appreciate them. So let me address them one at a time. First, the assumption about him using the word Christ. Jesus was actually a very common name in those days. I have a copy of the complete works of Josephus in my own library. He mentions 14 different people named Jesus. It makes sense to assume that by also using the term Christ, he's simply specifying which Jesus he's talking about, instead of claiming to be a follower. We should remember that Josephus was writing primarily to a Greek and Roman audience. The term Christ would have had special meaning to a Jew, but not to the audience Josephus wrote for. To the Greeks, to the Romans, Christ would designate a certain revolutionary from ancient Israel, not a title. This theory is supported by another text, this one is not in dispute from any serious scholar, in which he actually says Jesus who was called Christ. Another passage of Josephus. So he assembled the Sanhedrin of the judges and brought before them the brother of Jesus who was called Christ, whose name was James, and some others, or some of his companions. And when he had formed an accusation against them as breakers of the law, he delivered them to be stoned. That's from Antiquities of the Jews, book 20. Now, interestingly enough, this passage, the only other time Josephus mentions Jesus Christ, is, as I said, generally accepted by all scholars and probably reveals what Josephus intended in the book 18 passage, a mere identification, a distinction from other men of the same name. And what about the idea that to believe in the resurrection, you'd have to be a Christian? Folks, the idea of a resurrection was commonly taught by Jewish Pharisees in those days, and Josephus tells us that he became a Pharisee in the very first chapter of his collected writings. Pharisees believed in a final resurrected kingdom of God. This resurrection was discussed in their Holy Scripture. And there was even a story in 2 Kings describing Elijah, by the power of the Holy Spirit, raising a widow's son from the dead. Josephus accepted the Scriptures as the word of God. He tells us that. And he wrote himself about the prophet Elijah. Therefore, he could easily have accepted the resurrection of Christ on the basis of investigation, interviews with eyewitnesses, etc. He could comprehend the notion of a holy prophet rising from the dead without even flinching, without feeling obligated to number himself amongst the Christians. And then the idea of him saying, a man, if it be lawful to call him a man. I should point out that Jews believed in angels who could visit the earth, manifested as human beings. So this phrase, if it be lawful to call him a man, in no way proves any personal belief on Josephus's part in the divinity of Jesus. However, in all likelihood, Josephus saw Jesus not as an angel, but as a prophet, and was merely trying to describe him as an ordinary man by using an exaggerated figure of speech not uncommon to ancient Jewish writers. Possibly the historian considered both possibilities, angel or prophet. Josephus, aware of Jesus' miracles, may have simply been playing it safe by saying, I'm not really sure who Jesus was, but his impact is significant, and I remain open. Obviously, when a word like if is used, no conclusion has been drawn. We can confidently add Josephus' testimony as a Jewish, non-Christian verification of the resurrection. Now, what about Tony's friend who was harping on December the 25th, saying that that corresponded to all kinds of Greek and Roman festivals? Folks, it's a non-argument. The Bible does not say that Jesus was born on December 25th. So if you want to go out and prove that Jesus wasn't born on December the 25th, you know what you've proven about the Bible, yay or nay? Nothing. Nothing. Christmas is a conversion from the Roman holiday of Saturnalia and other holidays. So what? If God can convert souls, he can convert holidays. Moving on to other mail. Regarding my radio show series these past few weeks about discerning the will of God in our personal lives, and more specifically, the second in that series of four, Deb on Facebook says, I've been gone a while and extra busy, so I have some catching up to do on your radio show. She means catching up off my website where you can find them all and download them. Have some catching up to do on your web radio shows and articles, Bob, but I listened to this one twice. Excellent. I guess I should give out a reward for people who listen to my show not once, but twice. Regarding my comments today about Obama and his socialist tendencies, Anne on Facebook says, ooh, good one. You hit the vulnerable truth spot right to the heart of the issue. Go get him, Bob. Well, thank you for the encouragement, Anne. In my Washington Times column, Forbidden Table Talk, I published literary versions of the monologues you heard on today's program, both about the atheist sign and the comparison between Israel and Charlie Brown. As always, some people on these sites use their own names and others use nicknames like Grouchy. Grouchy says, it would be amusing if it weren't so tragic. There were no Palestinians until well after the Diaspora. There will never be any peace in this region until the last Jew is on a one-way trip to outer space on the front of a rocket. The Jews, in brackets Israelis, have been the only country that has ceded anything. I admire the Israeli people and trust them more than I do any Arab. With the Jew, I pretty much know where his loyalties are. With the Arab, not so much. Now, this next guy calls himself West Coast Finian. West Coast Finian says, well done, Bob Siegel. That presents the story about as accurately as anybody can. It is a disgrace that the world's liberal media and governments spend all day long telling Israel what it must do. They really should be paying much more attention to the more serious world problems, Darfur, Iran, North Korea, Tibet, Congo, several other sub-Saharan Africa killing fields. Instead, they all gang up on Israel. Israel controls less than 0.2% of Middle East land, whereas the Arabs, Islamics control 99.8%. Israel has no oil. The Arabs, Iranians have trillions of dollars in oil wealth. You can't tell me the means to solve the Middle East problem is not available to the Muslim world. They just will never accept a non-Muslim state country anywhere in the Middle East. Even if Israel reduced its size to less than 100 square miles, the Palestinians would still be whining and complaining about mistreatment, deprivation, and abuse. Only when the Muslim world will accept Israel as a permanent and as a partner with which to live in peace and not attack Israeli citizens will peace be remotely possible. All these blinding checkerboard two-state solution Swiss cheese mat proposals will fail. Give Israel the land from the Jordan to the Mediterranean and let the Palestinians have compensation, but they must either swear allegiance to Israel or move out. That is the only solution. Very well said. Of course, I always think it's well said when they agree with me. Check out this next guy. He doesn't agree. He calls himself Kaz Palestine. If he puts Palestine in his name, guess which side he's going to take? The Israelis or the Palestinians? Well, I'll take Palestinians for five. Johnny, you're right. Kaz Palestine says about my article, this is an absolutely ridiculous article. Anyone well-versed on the subject knows you can get just as much information from either side. I think you could take every time he says Jews and put Arabs in as well. Note that at the beginning, he very clearly states that it was the British that gave the land and it was not the British that encouraged all Jews to come. It was the Zionist propagandists. Well, there's a downright lie right there, but I'll continue reading it. They also resorted to terrorism to develop their site in 1948 when it was getting out of hands, according to the British, such as the bombing of David's Hotel. I'll continue reading this article that a fellow by the nickname of Palestine writes about my article or his letter about my article when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
To build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. On my Washington Times column, I had a literary version of the monologue I shared with you today about Israel. I'm reading some comments about that, including this one from a guy who calls himself Kaz Palestine, and I'm continuing with his letter. He says, I'm not justifying Palestinian terrorism at all. See, I love that. People say that, and then they go on to justify it. I'm not justifying Palestinian terrorism at all. It has happened, and it is wrong. Do people just blow themselves up because it's Wednesday, or do they do it because their home and their family has lived in for generations, just either got bulldozed, welded shut, or were kicked out? I'm not justifying it. I'm getting the facts out there. Talk about whatever war you want. Israel is violating the Fourth Geneva Convention as we speak by restricting freedom of movement, keeping Palestinians from work, school, their families, and even medical care. They are also bulldozing houses and building illegal settlements that were deemed illegal by the entire international community, except the U.S., who has a nice $3 billion a year for Charlie Brown to fall his poor aching body on every year. You make me sick to my stomach. Okay, well, that's just to prove to you that I don't only read the nice comments. I read them all. Let me respond. I began that article and my monologue today by mentioning the historical revision of the Middle East conflict. Unfortunately, Kaz's comment illustrates the effectiveness of such propaganda. Now, I did invite this fellow to call in the program. He said he couldn't do it this week, but he would do it next week. Next week, we'll be airing a repeat broadcast. But on a future Sunday, I promise to air him some time if he wants to call in after the Christmas break for a brand new program. It should be interesting because usually people who say things like, you make me sick, are not interested in actual facts. Now, this next letter is from a guy that calls himself Pincus, and he is responding to what Kaz Palestine said. Pincus says, Arab terrorists do not blow themselves up due to mistreatment of any kind. Just as Americans and Europeans are learning that it is Muslims from middle-class, educated backgrounds that have attacked Americans and Europeans. The World Trade Center attack was from wealthy Saudis. No one bulldozed their homes. The Muslims that attacked the UK, also wealthy, well-treated citizens of the UK. There is not one Jewish settlement in Judea and Samaria that is built over a previous Arab village in Israel. This is a big lie. The last time a bulldozer made the news in Israel, it was the two Jerusalem Arabs bulldozer drivers that went about flipping over buses and taxis in the streets of Jerusalem until an armed Jew climbed the ladder of the bulldozer and put a bullet through the terrorist's head. The Israeli Knesset members did ask that these terrorists' houses be destroyed, but these houses are still standing. Also, the Fourth Geneva Convention has to do with transferring a native population out of their land and moving in a different population. This does not apply to Israel because there never was a state of Palestine ever or any such sovereign Arab state in that area, so there is no such thing as an indigenous Palestinian people. The only people around who could be indigenous to the land of Israel are the Jewish people, the rightful owners of the land. It is too bad that Bob started his history lesson with the beginning of the 20th century as the Jewish ownership of the land goes back over 4,000 years. Well, that's true. I was doing that Charlie Brown analogy, so I started it from the time the deals were being made. But you can go to my website and read a 12-part history of the Israelis and the Palestinians, and it does start with ancient times. Anyway, Pincus continues. The Fourth Geneva Convention also does not apply because Israel has not removed these Arabs from the territory or has settled Jews on any land personally owned. Finally, while Arabs live in Israel as citizens with more political and civil rights than Arabs in any Muslim country, it is only the Palestinian Authority that is demanding that in the future state of Palestine, God forbid, no Jews will be allowed to be citizens or even live there. So, Kaz Palestine, if what you say is true, then why isn't the Arab population of Judea and Samaria declining? Why is it growing, and why was its economy one of the fastest growing in the world last year? The Arabs living in these territories have it very good. In fact, last week I saw an Arab from Bethlehem, historically a Jewish city, driving a brand new Hummer. Do you know what that costs just to fill up the tank of over 6 gallons in Israel, $6 a gallon in Israel? No Israeli I know can afford a Hummer. Why is the infant mortality rate of Arabs in Gaza lower than Turkey and other Muslim nations? Why do Egyptians want to live in Gaza, and why do all of these East Jerusalem Arabs want to live in West Jerusalem in the event of a prospective division of the city? Come to Israel and see the truth with your own eyes. Well, I thought Pincus gave quite a response. This next one is from Larry. He says, Bob, on your show, please, please explain the following one point to your listeners over and over again since it gets to the heart of the matter. The reason for the entire Middle East conflict is really very simple. The root cause of the conflict is the Palestinian and Arab refusal to acknowledge that the Jewish people have any historical connection to any part of that land. That's it. It's very simple. This is the real racism. This is the reason they rejected the partition plan. Never created a state when Jordan and Egypt occupied the West Bank and Gaza until 1967, rejected several other authors since then. Well, you are absolutely right, Larry. The big lie today is that an indigenous group of people called Palestinians inhabited the Holy Land until 1947, when those mean, nasty Jews came from Europe to throw them out. Never happened that way. Actually, the Jews inhabited that land all the way up to the time of the Romans when Emperor Hadrian crushed a Jewish revolt and renamed the land Palestine, a Latinized version of the word Philistine, after their extinct enemies, the Philistines, to rub the Jews' faces in it. Arabs did not enter the land in any significant number until the 600s as a result of Muslim expansion. When the United Nations gave Israel legal status as a nation, the Arabs in the land did not call themselves Palestinians. They called themselves Arabs, and they turned down the offer of a separate state. The term Palestinian was used of Jews, and the term Palestinian wasn't used of Arabs in the land until the 1960s. It was an invented publicity ploy by the terrorist thug Yasser Arafat, who realized that the Arabs were never going to win a military victory with Israel, so they decided to wage a PR war instead. Well, RB would disagree with me. RB says, why don't you ask the question as to how you would react if you had land owned by your family that was confiscated by another person? Again, all this stuff that never happened. Group or country for no other reason than that they want it. Oh, that's the only reason the Jews are in that land, because they just wanted to take it away from somebody else. All right, let me continue reading. I got to resist the temptation to make comments as I go and read these letters in their entirety. He says, how about being denied water but for a few hours a week while settlers with no legal claim to the land would move in and enjoy abundant water, green grass, swimming pools? Never happened that way, RB. All the while, the reservoir supplying the water is in Palestinian territory in the West Bank. How would you react when foreigners and Israelis can make a 20-mile trip in 30 minutes and Israelis can make a 20-mile trip in 30 minutes? Okay, I just read that twice. But for you to visit the same location, it may take a day. How about being denied access to your place of employment for no good reason other than the attitude of an Israeli checkpoint individual? How would you react if your source of livelihood, for instance, an olive grove, is bulldozed by the Israelis simply for spite, harassment, or to make way for an Israeli settlement? All lies, but I'll continue. If all you would do is whine and complain, then I guess you also would be happy to cede all other parts of southern Arizona to drug smugglers, bandits, and people who traffic in human lives. Okay, RB, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt and assume you sincerely believe these lies. But they are lies. They are propaganda. And Mikkel says about my article, agree absolutely. If the Palestinians didn't have the Jews to kick around, they would find somebody else. They will never be happy. Every time they refuse to talk, they only justify Israel building more settlements. First thing you know, they will get up one morning and the settlements will go right through the West Bank. Serve them right for being so stupid. Okay, regarding the atheist sign and the message that I wrote in response to it, John says, I don't believe that the atheists feel threatened, and I don't see how they could feel offended. Perhaps in their open denial, they are truly seeking to believe in a God and want answers, hoping somehow someone will give. But as the saying goes, for those who believe, no explanation is necessary. For those who don't believe, no explanation is possible. Why do they feel the need to attack religion, and why does it seem to mainly be focused on Christians? I believe that the time is coming where soon all will come to know God exists. He's already speaking through the use of his creation, the weather, and the earth itself. Can't you hear him? He's not a very happy. Merry Christmas to all. Fräulein says, thanks for a thoughtful and sensible approach to the issue. I totally agree with you. Hummingbird says, we need to pray for those who are still in darkness. That is our job. I've been told that religion is for people who are weak and afraid or just plain stupid. I am none of those things. I once lived without Christ in my life, and it was then that I was weak, afraid, and stupid, being controlled by other people and our backward society and doing things I didn't want to do in order to gain approval and success. I had to figure it all out, get it right, be the best. Talk about stress. Then one day God revealed something to me. We really don't know anything. I've proven this over and over in my life by some of the decisions that I have made. And Sandy writes, thanks, Bob. I totally agree with you. I was once an atheist too. Okay, join us for a repeat of our Christmas celebration next week. Another repeat broadcast the week after. And the second week of January, I will look forward to being back with you live. You are always welcome. Your questions are welcome too. We'll be right back.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.